Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Zero Point Radio Show at BBS.com, BBSRadio.com, sorry. It's Saturday, June the 8th, and it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, at least where I am. I don't know how the weather is. It's been pretty crazy all over the continent. And the people who are into the harp scenario are all over it. They all know that the weather's being manipulated, and ain't it fun. But we'll be watching for things, and keep your eyes open, because with weather like this, gardens aren't growing properly. I'm hearing complaints even in the city gardens. People are not getting great response out of a lot of different plants because of low light and too much water and not enough warmth and yada yada, that goes on and on and on. All I know is my organic squash is just looking lovely. But that's my little garden, and it's only one little pot. I'm a little worried about the food supply, and now we're hearing that genetically modified wheat has escaped and it's polluting the environment, and we've got countries like Japan are refusing U.S. wheat because it's been contaminated, and they don't know from where, and they don't know from when, and they can't test all the seed. So things are hitting the fan, people. One of the things that's hitting the fan these days is smart meters. And we've talked about smart meters before, and we've had our guest this afternoon on before, and he is one of the top experts, I think, on the planet in terms of EMF radiation and the effects on the human body. And how did he learn that? Well, he spent a lot of time in our own military. So, in other words, you know, by listening to our guest, whose name is Jerry Flynn, you may remember his name from before. Jerry was in the military working on EMF weaponry for the Canadian government for 22 years. And he's really got some stuff going on out in BC, where the battle against smart meters is really pitched right now. And this, despite the fact there was an election in BC, they kind of put a moratorium on installation of smart meters while the election was going on. I think they were hoping that the activists would go away. Well, our guest today, Jerry Flynn, has not gone away. He has stuck around along with other people and groups out in BC, and they're holding the government's feet to the fire. And so therefore, it is a real pleasure for me to welcome back to the show Jerry Flynn. Jerry, welcome, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Dee, and thank you for inviting me back on your program. I very much enjoyed it.
Well, I'm going to very much enjoy the next hour, because I want you to, you know, we turn you loose, because I don't need to make any comments. I might have a question here or there, but I don't need to make any comments, because you explain things so very, very well. So I'm just going to turn you loose. But one thing I do want you to focus on and make sure that we all hear and can support, because we can duplicate this effort wherever we are. And that is, you have issued a challenge to Fortis BC, which is the meter-producing company that's contracting to BC Hydro through the BC Utilities Commission. And you've issued a challenge, and that challenge is, come on, guys, debate me. I'll take any one of you. Debate me in public with the media present, and let's get down to the heart of the matter. Let's do the nitty-gritty. So, we're all ready to do that with you, Jerry. How about you tell us all about it?
Well, I'll make a mild correction, if I may. I actually challenged the electric utility. Like in British Columbia, we had two utilities. The larger is BC Hydro. The smaller, but still very significant, it's a national company, actually. It's called Fortis BC. And so they provide the hydro in our particular community and a lot of other communities throughout the province. And, I mean, their information and misinformation is so egregious that I had no, and not only that, but, I mean, if I didn't do something, then I would end up finding smart meters on my own doggone house. And people, once they become educated and find out just what that means, they'll scare the living daylights out of them. And let me explain. and things have even changed, Dee, since when you and I first spoke. Back then, a smart meter contained two transmitters. They've changed now. They've gone away from an Itron smart meter, and they're going to a Cisco smart meter. And the Cisco smart meter, of all things, has eight transmitters inside, not just two, but eight. Can you imagine? Like right now on your home, you have a perfectly benign, harmless analog meter that records the electricity consumption in your home. And tomorrow, if you allow them to come along and take that doggone perfectly harmless, reliable, quiet analog meter and replace it with a smart meter, you're going to end up with what could be a total of eight pulsing microwave transmitters on your home. And that doesn't even consider all the smart appliances. Like, the reason you have so many transmitters inside that meter is because the utilities envisage that each and every home from here on in will have smart appliances. In fact, the industry in the U.S. is trying to actually put pressure on government to make that compulsory, that from now on, the only appliances that you'll be able to buy will indeed be smart, meaning they will have their own pulsing microwave transmitter. And people need to realize that every one of these doggone pulsing microwave transmitters, but one, all but one, will pulse away on exactly the same frequency as your microwave oven. So I saw fit to actually go out to the president and CEO. His name is John Walker, just like, was that Scotch, I think it is?
Yeah, Johnny Walker.
Johnny Walker. Well, I went out to him and I sent it via registered mail, invited, challenging him personally, or any of his senior executives, or even they brought in a world-class scientist by the name of Dr. William Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y. And people only need to Google him. And he runs a company, or he's a principal in a major international firm called Exponent, E-X-P-O-N-E-N-T, USA. And that's based in the eastern U.S. But he's like a hired gun that the chemical industry, the tobacco industry, all of those controversial industries, where they need some high power to defend them, they go out and they hire exponents. So Dr. William Bailey flies around the world. Well, I challenged him as well to debate with me publicly, with the media there, the pros and cons of not just smart meters, but wireless technology in particular smart meters and the mesh grid network. Just, if I can for a second, like as I explained before, any utility, they envisage what they call a smart or like a mesh grid network, like a community, the smallest of which will be 500 homes, the largest of which would be 5,000 homes. So if you look at just the smallest community of only 500 homes, which say today would have no, absolutely zero pulsing microwave transmitters on their home, if that community of just 500 homes allows them to, the utility, put meters on their houses, what will end up, almost overnight, once these smart appliances come into the homes, you'll end up having the unbelievable number of over 8,500 pulsing microwave transmitters in, like, on your home and also inside your house. Uh-huh. And people are not aware of this. I think I mentioned to you earlier, like, my sister lives in Fort Erie, Ontario, and she tells me they all have smart meters. Oh, and yeah. No one's concerned. No one knows. No. I mean, everyone there just thinks, well, so Hydro took off that meter, they gave me a newer one, and everything is the same.
Uh-huh.
And that's the part that I object to, is
that's
this
dishonesty. That's what Ontario did, Jerry. That's what Ontario did. I've got a smart meter on my house.
Have you?
Yeah. I mean, mind you, I rent, so I don't have an awful lot to say about it anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing is that my entire neighborhood is smart metered. And what you're saying, I want to go back to a point that you made because it's really important. And that is that mesh grid with the smart appliances and how they're trying to make sure that only smart appliances can be sold. It goes back to something that I read a few years ago where they said that eventually, and this is under Rex 84 and Agenda 21, they said in this particular article that what is envisioned is that not only can they control all of your appliances. They can crank them down, they can crank them up, they can do whatever they want remotely. But on top of that, what they were looking for was legislation that would not allow your house to be sold unless it was up to code. And, of course, these codes that we're talking about here, if it has to do with wiring and appliances and all that stuff, they can set up codes for us to force us to be unable to sell our homes. And this has been in the works for a long time, and it ties right in with what you just said. And that's a scary possibility to me.
Well, I'm not personally familiar with some of that stuff you mentioned, Dee, but it's really quite consistent with everything
else.
Yeah, it is. And the shame of it is, like I can show you in my PowerPoint, for example, where this is in the U.S., where there are all kinds of lawsuits from people who are suing because the value of their property has suddenly plummeted because they find that there's a cell phone tower nearby or there's a substation nearby. And like the latest, most authoritative, independent science-based study in the world today is called the Bioinitiative Report 2012, which was released to the world on January the 7th. And in it, for the first time ever, it categorically states unambiguously that radio frequency radiation, such as you get from all these pulsing transmitters, including your cell phone, your Wi-Fi router, your cordless phone, your baby monitor, all of those things, is indeed a human carcinogen. Not a probable or not a possible, but for the first time ever, it is a human carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, they go on and they make an equally convincing statement. They say that the power line frequency, which means the frequency coming into your house is 60 hertz or 60 cycle, the magnetic field created by that is also a human carcinogen.
Cool.
And again, like the vast majority of you don't know it. But my question, as a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen, is where the heck is Health Canada? Like, why is this allowed to happen? Where is your chief provincial medical officer, like in Ontario? We have one out here. His name is Perry Kendall, Dr. Perry Kendall.
Guess where he came from?
From Ontario.
City of Toronto. He was the MOH in Toronto.
That's right. Well, we've been after him personally. Like, I've tried to embarrass the man, but you can't do that either.
Can't get to him.
Well, he doesn't even have the courtesy to acknowledge anything. Mm. And we have two major organizations out here called the Citizens for Safe Technology and the Coalition to Stop Smart Meters, both headed up by very, very competent and well-informed women. And they've been throwing all kinds of science-based studies by independent, world-class scientists to this Perry Kendall to say, why won't you protect British Columbians? Like, never mind Health Canada, which we know is corrupt, and I've said publicly that they're corrupt. Why won't the chief provincial medical health officer defend us? Because,
well, especially since under the Constitution, the provinces have control over health care.
That's exactly right.
Health Canada has absolutely no right to make health law.
You're absolutely right. And I've gone so far, I've actually written to each and every single provincial chief medical officer individually and tried to embarrass them by pointing out the shortcomings of Health Canada and also the failure of our own provincial medical officer here. But as yet, I've had not even the courtesy of a reply from anybody. It's one of those things like everyone's afraid to rock the boat and everyone's apathetic and I don't know. There's some.
I think they're paralyzed by fear. It's like I was talking to someone earlier today about that. You know, why is it that people are so dumbed down? And my friend was blaming television. I said, no, you can't just blame television. I said, I think what it is that we grow up in our family, and to the extent that our parents educate us as to which authorities we need to bow down to, we're kind of indoctrinated into that. I mean, I can remember when I was a little kid walking into a bank with my dad. And because my dad was so deferential towards bankers, I thought I was like at the throne of God, you know, walking into these big monster buildings with pillars and columns and marbles and hollow interiors and all of this formality. And they seemed to be ruling things like they were in heaven, you know, ruling the earth. And I was just one of those people who said, I'm not buying into that. I want to know, why are these people so important? But that's me. And yeah. Most people learn from their parents to bow down. And then as they grow up, they either bring in enough information so they say, wait a minute, I think that's wrong, or they don't. And the vast majority have that indoctrination. They're watching TV and they have it reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. By the time they're adults, they're reinforced but good. And so consequently, you've got exactly what you're talking about. Is it all these people across this country, and especially in Ontario, I'm so ashamed of Ontario, because they got away with this, and they came by stealth, and they changed all our meters. They didn't tell anybody what was going on. It was BC. It was you. You and Curtis Bennett and Eunice St. Clair and Sharon Noble and Dennis Noble and all these people who have come together in BC. You're the guys who have started to wake Ontario up. So bravo to you. But this well, is what is really frightening me.
Yeah.
You know, that people are that dumbed down. We're living in microwaves, as you said. We're living in microwaves. We may as well be a turkey roasting in a microwave oven.
Well, it's one of those, like, if you talk to a utility, if you only look on, if any of your listening audience, if they would simply go to the website of their local electric utility and just look at what they state on their own website, and they tell you that you can stand beside a smart meter for 20 years continuously and that you'll receive no more radiation than you would from a single cell phone conversation lasting for 30 minutes. I mean, that's absolutely preposterous. But see, the average person knows nothing about this quite obscure science, and therefore they have no reason to believe it. But it's absolutely it's absolutely untrue. And like, if I could sit in front of the president of Fortis BC or any other electric utility, they couldn't possibly argue against that to my face with the media there, because it's absolutely untrue. They do not, like, for example, in the California Court of Law, okay, the Pacific Gas and Electric, which is the largest utility in California, there are three, but it's the largest. It's also one of the largest in the U.S. And they had to admit to a female judge in the California Court of Law that smart meters actually are active virtually nonstop, 24 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
365 days a year in perpetuity, and you
mm-hmm.
cannot shut them off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they go on to say that the amount of time they're actually transmitting consumer-related data is for a very, very short period of time in the day, and that is true. But the utilities are terribly misleading, deliberately misleading you into thinking that they're active for only a short period of time, when in actual fact, they're active virtually nonstop. And that also, by the way, with a similar statement was made by Silver Springs Networks, and they're the company that actually makes these blinking radios. And they said in front of the California Public Utility Commission that, yes, indeed, our meters are working virtually nonstop, 24 hours and 7. And it's what they call network management, is to maintain synchronicity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just object to the lying and the deliberate deception that is happening. And, like, I'm also an intervener here in B.C. with the British Columbia Utilities Commission for their hearing of Fortis BC's application to
mm-hmm.
smart meters. And I get incensed when if you look at all, and I've, by the way, if I turn around in my office here, I've got three ring binders. They're each 4 inches wide, meaning I've got 20 inches of binders filled with thousands and thousands of pages, all of which are telling me essentially that the customer wants this and the customer wants that. And it's pure baloney. Like, there's not one single advantage to a smart meter. There's not one single benefit it gives me over my analog meter. But on top of which, my analog meter doesn't spy into my house.
Nor does it start fires.
Nor does it irradiate you. That's right.
Nor does it have the potential to destroy some of the equipment that you've got.
Yep, that's right.
You know, I mean, I'm wondering, all these people, they're spending all this money on iPads and everything.
Yeah.
Like, your wiring in your house right now isn't built to handle this stuff.
I'll give you an interesting anecdote. Are you familiar with the name Barry Trower?
Oh, yes.
Well, as am I. And he's, just for the benefit of your audience, he's a retired military, British Navy scientist. And his expertise was in electronic warfare weapons. And he's come out of retirement, and he travels around the world at his own expense. He doesn't even accept money for accommodation or travel expenses.
Wow.
Charges nothing whatsoever. I didn't know that till just recently. But I learned from a recent document I've received that even Michelle Obama, like President Obama's wife, has contacted him discreetly through an agent inquiring of the dangers of EMR because she's a mother and has two children.
Isn't that nice of her?
That's right. So even though her husband went to Florida, I think it was in 2009, where they kicked off the smart meter thing like in the States, and here's his wife, because she's a mother, inquiring, like, is this stuff dangerous or not? Very telling.
Amazing. But you see, you know, that goes back to Nancy Reagan and the joke that went around that was saying that the plastic people eat off the good dishes and the good people eat off the plastic dishes. Remember that? So
yeah.
There's Miss Obama there with her organic garden at the White House.
Yeah.
And her promotion of all things organic for her own family.
Yeah.
While her husband goes out pressuring people to take on these international standards of smart grids and everything else.
Yeah.
I can't hear you audio-wise. Doug, is there a problem?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're back.
Okay.
That's good.
I would never leave you, Dee.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, but don't tell your wife.
You're
doing a lot of the same thing as Barry Trower, though. You've been on, like, quite a route going through B.C.
Well, I've actually spoken in a total of 20 communities so far.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But, this is not the kind of information that people should be ignoring, because it's that kind of a subtle attack on our health and our well-being.
Yeah.
That, you know, if we, like, how long does it take the average body, the average human body, to start showing effects from microwaves? Can it be like instant?
No, not really.
It's kind of cumulative?
It depends on what, if you're talking from an epidemiological point of view, or like a biological, like a scientist can detect it in studies within, say, an hour.
Uh-huh.
Based on some of the reports I've seen. Like a child, and again, I will not quote this accurately, but the essence of what I'm saying is correct, that if you give a cell phone to a baby for even 1 minute, scientists can detect a change in that baby's pattern of electric waves almost immediately, and they say that baby will be affected for, say, quite a number of hours. So it does indeed have an immediate effect. But in terms of what you and I would notice in, say, a living person, like a normal environment, you and I wouldn't notice it. But they also know that, say, cancers have a latency period of at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, interestingly enough, they did a study from 1999 to 2009 on children, those who have used the phone for, like, say, for 10 years. And they found that the incidence of cancer had doubled. And that was extremely early for that evidence to manifest itself, you know.
And that's glioma cancer. That's brain cancer mostly,
that's right, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is what we found. That there was a university in the States that had a number of glioma brain cancer cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
And students were dying because of the cell towers that are sitting in the middle of campus down there.
Yeah.
What was that, San Diego State or something like that?
It was San Diego State. That's right.
Was it?
Yeah.
So, and you're talking about, this is not a small university.
Oh, no, not at all.
You know, and what you find is, it's like everywhere. They're popping up everywhere. They're putting up wireless hubs in Starbucks.
Yeah.
And every apartment building owners are now being schmoozed. Oh, well, if you let us put a tower up there, we'll pay you.
Yeah, but it's even worse than that. Like, you cannot go on a Greyhound bus today. They, too, are wireless. Some schools in Alberta, they've made their buses wireless for the children, believing that they're actually doing things for the child's betterment, to help them do their education, like in a fairly long commute. But when you go on whether it's a cruise ship today, they're wireless. You go on an airplane, they're wireless. You go on a train, they're wireless. And to a very large extent, people simply do not know.
Mm-hmm.
I have on my PowerPoint presentation in front of me, I have one that you may not be aware of, and that is UNICEF, you know, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, which is the charity. Their own research, this is 2012, their own research found that 85% increase in central nervous system disorders.
And where is UNICEF?
This is Wi-Fi in schools, yeah.
Yeah, well, where is UNICEF when it comes to this kind of stuff? Why aren't they actually warning people?
Yeah.
And why is it that these are global programs that we're seeing in place? We're being harmonized to everybody else in the world. The smart grid isn't just Canada.
No,
it's everywhere.
That's
it's
right.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, and the UN is supposed to be everywhere, why isn't the UN coming forward with this information?
I agree with you. Well, you'd only have to look at, when I first started this, I was very, very hesitant to use words like conflict of interest or collusion, and certainly not corruption. But, I mean, the evidence is so solid, I'm not afraid of anybody trying to come after me legally, because the evidence is irrefutable. You only, as I mentioned to you before, you only have to Google the name Dr. Michael Rappacoli, and you can see that he's the guy that almost he co-authored Canada's Health Canada Safety Code 6 at the egregiously high level that it is today.
That very incomplete and unsatisfying document called Safety Code 6.
Oh, that is right.
That they violate on a daily basis.
That's
because
right.
They've never updated it to what's right.
That is correct. And then, of course, he moved on to the WHO, the World Health Organization, and somehow he managed to inveigle himself into a position where he headed up a 10-year, $250 million study, and lo and behold, the World Health Organization has high standards, which are almost identical to Canada's. And then he moved on, and he formed this new thing in 1992 called ICNIRP, the International Commission for the Non-Radiating Ionizing Protection. And he became the chairman of that. And guess what? They, too, have similarly high standards. So that one individual who did his PhD in the University of Ottawa in 1980, he, more than any other single person on this earth, is responsible for our egregiously high levels of radiation that is permitted around the world.
Well, shame on you, Michael Rappacoli, and sound echo from...
Yeah.
You know, from door to door across the country and around the world. This goes along with another thing I was talking about to somebody today. It's time we got to stop being so ding-blasted polite to these guys.
You're absolutely right.
Because they're murdering us.
That's right.
By degrees. And quite frankly, I'm not going to worry about Robert's rules or, you know, the rules of politeness or being politically correct if some son of a gun is trying to kill me.
I agree with you.
You know, I mean, how can any population just sit there and say, oh, you want to kill us? Okay. What? Like, where are the minds of our population? Where are they?
That's
this
right.
is why it's so important to have you here. I'm, you know, again, I'm very grateful that you're here to share this with us. But please continue.
Well, people need to know that EMF, or like electromagnetic fields, which you get from virtually anything that radiates, like any of these wireless devices, are also like your appliances in your kitchen.
Yep.
Or the house wiring in your house, or the nearby substation, or the nearby high voltage transmission lines. They all create radiation of some sort, whether it's a magnetic radiation or a combination. And the incidence of cancer today is getting ever more scary. And people need to realize that this radiation and interferes with the production of melatonin. And, for example, people that's men and women who have breast cancer, their bodies have only one-tenth of the normal level of melatonin. And that's largely because of the radiation, the EMR. The same thing with prostate cancer is about one-half of the normal level. Autistic children have about half of the normal level. Night shift work, there's an interesting one, which makes me think also of the utility. Quebec Hydro did a study, at least, I want to say 1990, but probably 20 years ago, of their own industry. Mm-hmm. And the results show that utility workers, that is technicians and that working around high voltage lines or substation, that the incidence of cancer was 11 times higher than normal. And the minute the Hydro-Québec learned of that, they quashed it immediately, forbade any further research, and would not release any information to anybody inquiring.
Isn't that just a tad backwards,
Jerry? Oh, that's
right.
And this is one employees.
You find something harmful, you're supposed to stop that, not letting the word get out.
Yeah.
So what could possibly be the motive of hiding life-saving information?
Yeah.
You got to wonder what sort of people are doing this. And then, of course, we look, and I got to throw this in, too. If we finally have at least one MP who has said, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I've had enough, because I've been hearing rumblings since last fall that there are a lot of Tory backbenchers up in Ottawa who are grumbling about being muzzled. And the things they're being muzzled about include stuff like this. You know, we activists, you and me and all those other people that we all know about, and the public doesn't know all of them, but you know, we know about these brave souls who are out there speaking truth to power, and these MPs are hearing this stuff, but they're not doing anything, and they're not able to do anything because they're being muzzled. And now that that's coming out, things may start to get real interesting. I'm not saying they're going to change so much, because we don't know what kind of mechanization they're going to put into what. We don't know what efforts they will put in to stifle it, but it sure gets starting to get out there now.
Well, within the past 2 weeks, Dee, I personally have written to every single member of Parliament on both sides of the House to apprise them of the fact that somebody in Stephen Harper's PMO, the Prime Minister's office, somebody is shielding him from my correspondence, unlike the correspondence of others like me,
mm-hmm.
who are trying to warn him of the dangers of wireless technology in the use of our, from a national security perspective, because there is nothing more defenseless, there's nothing more vulnerable than a wireless radio system, which is exactly what an electric power grid is.
Mm-hmm.
And even the U.S. Defense Secretary, or the former U.S. Defense Secretary, Pinella, has come out and said categorically that something the utilities don't ever want to talk about, and that is that in the U.S., they have 18 critical infrastructures, as they call them. Of those 18, 17 of them depend entirely on the electric grid.
Oh,
and of all the military bases in the U.S., only one military base has its own independent power supply, or power source. All the rest, all the military bases depend on the electric power grid. So if you get somebody that comes along with what they call an electromagnetic pulse weapon, and they've been around since the early 1960s, and even Iran has them, North Korea has them, I mean, they could knock out a national electric power grid very, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it would bring the to the states to its knees. And, I'm not saying this, but Pinella is saying this. The NSA has said that. The head of the CIA has said that this electric wireless grid is so vulnerable to hacking. But it's the industry has such clutches on the governments. There's so much collusion and there's so much money interfering. Same thing with Canada. The telecom industry is a $1 trillion industry. And there's, well, like, for example, the end of this year, 2013, Industry Canada here, they'll be auctioning off the channels that we used to use for analog TV, which is like the 700 megahertz range.
Yep.
They'll be auctioning those off, and like a standard auction, like you're going to auction to buy a car. Well, the major telecom companies will be auctioning, bidding against each other, and they'll reap at least $4 to $5 billion from that alone.
Sorry. Well, and, you know, it's whatever they can make money from, they're going to turn it around, so they do.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, I mean, we knew when we went from analog to digital a couple of years back, I mean, I have not had regular television in my house since that happened.
Yeah.
I watch TV online, and that's it.
Yeah.
I told my cable company to eat dirt.
Did you?
And since then, you know, I mean, I find it perfectly adequate. The only thing is that Canadian broadcasters are very, very difficult to capture in terms of online. They've got all kinds of encodings and everything, so you have to go right to them to watch anything.
Yeah.
And I, quite frankly, I think it's really stupid of them. I think that they're missing a marketing opportunity and would love to have the opportunity to say to them, you guys should be selling your time to your advertisers and saying, look, you're online as well. Your commercials are online as well. And they could actually charge more. But, oh, no, there's another interesting motive going on behind all of this. And it's all tied in. And what you're talking about here, I see this, I envision this, is they're tweaking the entire system to match up to bandwidths and microwave settings and this and that so that they can literally control everything, you know, one switch. One switch, and they got kind of everything under control.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it looks like to me.
There's a very interesting thing about to happen. In fact, I think it's already underway. In Canada, Health Canada is going through the motions of reviewing Safety Code 6, like the standards.
That's the words, going through the motions.
Oh, that's right. And so they went out to the Royal Society, I think it's called, to give it like a public, like the optics look good.
Uh-huh.
And they look genuine. But in actual fact, you only have, and so they've established what they call an expert panel. And so this expert panel is supposed to weigh all of the evidence, both from independent sources and otherwise, and determine whether, in fact, the current Safety Code 6 exposure limits are adequate or whether they need to be revised upwards or downwards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one only has to look at the membership. Who is it that's being put on this? And I only have a couple of names in front of me. Well, like one is Dr. John Mulder, M-O-U-L-D-E-R. He's a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And it's common knowledge that he's made a very lucrative business over the years. He's earned hundreds of thousands of dollars disputing the existence of adverse EMF, like electromagnetic field health effects, even those accepted by most other countries. And yet he's going to be part of this panel.
Yep.
And the guy heading it up is Daniel Krusky, I think it is. And he's the head of the R. Samuel McLaughlin Research Center in Ottawa. But you only have to look at who paid for that research center. And half of that money came from industry.
Yep. That's and the same deal as I ran into this week on the GMO issue.
Yes, yeah.
Because they've got this, there's this group called Crop Life Canada.
Yes.
Okay, and they were, after all of the hoo-ha came out after the march against Monsanto on the 25th of May,
mm-hmm.
All this stuff about Monsanto and people are getting all hot to trot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Crop Life Canada comes out and says, oh, I'm very disappointed in, you know, people's lack of trust and don't they know this and don't they know that. Well, if you look at Crop Life Canada, who are they? They are Syngenta, Dow, DuPont, Monsanto, Cargill, Bayer, BASF, All these, they're all bioengineering companies, every single one. So when you look at a panel that is empowered to give information publicly, you're looking at exactly the same thing across the board. When something works, they keep using it. And now they're using it in smart meters, too. There you go.
Okay, something you may know. Health Canada, as you know, tells anybody who approaches them that Safety Code 6 is safe and that Canadians are protected. But if you go to the National Research Council of Canada, which is quite an august body of independent scientists, and they actually are acclaimed around the world for their independence and integrity and their expertise. And their president is a Dr. John McDougall. And I've written to him, bringing to his attention the contradiction in their stance against, as opposed to like Health Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to hear my slide point, but the National Resource Council said back in 2011 that, I'll get it here for a second. But they say that, here we go. And this is a quote, by the way. It says, many Canadians are being exposed to dangerous levels of radiation and concluded that a new biologically based guideline is needed instead of the dangerous, outdated thermal guidelines, referring to Safety Code 6. So, I mean, this is National Research Council in Ottawa, Health
uh-huh.
Canada's in Ottawa.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do they have such conflicting and opposite views? And so I've actually written to him, as I mentioned to you. He's put me in touch with their senior scientist in radiation protection, who's going to be calling me on Monday, this coming Monday, to 2 o'clock my time, so that he and I can discuss this disagreement. That should be very interesting.
Can I be a fly on the wall at that
wish,
one, Jerry?
Well, I'm curious why he wants to phone me rather than do it in writing where we have a record of the dialogue. You know?
Well, he'll have a record of it. You won't.
Yeah. Well, I will. I'll have a tape recorder on.
Attaboy, because they will. They'll be recording.
Course.
You can
Absolutely.
Bet they'll be recording.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I would make one small suggestion and say,
sure.
You don't mind if I record that, do you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if he says, yeah, I do, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you object?
Yeah,
what
I'll
are you going to be saying here that people shouldn't know?
I agree with you. Oh, I have some very good news for your listeners, by the way. I can't tell you all of it, but I can give you the gist.
Okay.
As of this week, I've just finished helping write a press release that should be released, hopefully, in the next couple of days. And it's from a very significant Indian band, like First Nations, here in British Columbia,
mm-hmm.
who have made the decision, like this is a council decision, to forbid smart meters on their property.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so thrilled. I'm hoping it'll get out like either tomorrow or on Monday.
Yeah, well, given that about 110% of BC is actually under native land claim right now, that ought to get interesting.
Well, the thing is, Dee, if this comes out, like the media have been assiduously avoiding any of our literature, any of our correspondence, any of our notices and that, but they cannot ignore this particular band when this announcement comes out. And as I told the chief, I think you've just you've made your place in history indelibly, you know. Once
well,
out.
I can tell you, I know of a couple of native news networks that really get around. So when this news gets out, that's
lovely.
Spread really quick.
Lovely, Dee. That's wonderful news.
Yeah. And one of them is Mohawk Nation News, and the other one is Eagle Watch.
Okay.
And two very, very powerful and very, very well-advised native women. One called Continetta Horn, and the other one is Quito.
Okay.
And between the two of them, they cover an awful lot of territory, so I can hardly wait for that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Please make sure I get a copy of
that.
Oh,
no, trust me. The world will know. Trust me. You'll
good.
Be one of the first. Yeah, for sure.
Good, because this is incredibly important. I mean, we can, I think, look to some of our native communities for a lot of really good guidance. Yeah, especially when it comes to protecting the earth and its inhabitants. They are way ahead of us.
Well,
it's because a lot of things.
It's because they own their land, so they really are an independent nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, where the utility, you and I are prisoners to the utility, and they ignore us and just cast us aside, they can't do that with the First Nations band.
No, they can't. No,
so
they can't.
And our best ally by far and away will be the First Nations people, because once we can show them the evidence. You can't refute the blinking evidence, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think it is. Oh, for sure, yeah.
It's right in front of you. What are you going to do about that? You know, it's like I keep telling people a long time ago, I learned that only the truth is real, and what is real cannot be threatened.
That's
like,
right.
Okay, you think the sky is green? Well, get your spray can out and call me when you're done. Because, it's like, there it is. It's coming out. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And the thing that is worrisome to me is that there's so much truth coming out right now.
Yeah.
That if all of these systems were to crash at once because of information that the public has, what in the flying blazes are we going to be left with?
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think that has a lot to do with, you know, people would rather deal with the devil they know than the devil they don't know, or no devil at all, because there's nobody there to hang on to.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, this reluctance of people to get involved and to fight for their own well-being, as you are doing, as CST is doing, as Stop Smart Meters BC is doing, as Martin Weatherall and his groups out here in Ontario are doing.
Yeah.
We all have to stand up for our own benefit. If we don't, nobody's going to do it.
That's right.
Nobody's going to do it.
Yeah.
And I know one lady by the name of Barbie, who you probably know.
I do know her, quite well.
Has said, and I'm quoting her again, and this, I think, is very important. These days, if you are not an activist, you are a victim.
Oh, without question.
You know, I mean, that is, I think, one of the most important quotes for people to get next to.
Yeah.
They have to realize that if it were not for people like you and for some of these grassroots groups that are fighting with you and for you, if it were not for you, none of us would know what the heck was going on until it was far too late.
Yeah.
Far too late.
That's for sure.
I mean, I think we're too late now. I think a lot of damage has been done.
Without question.
That is irreversible.
Yep.
And hopefully what we can do is minimize what, you know, in future what happens. But I tell you, I mean, they put that smart meter on my wall, and I noticed a difference.
Yeah.
I noticed a difference, and I can't imagine. You know, the symptoms that you get, the tinnitus, the odd headache, nausea, different little symptoms that seem not to be related to smart meters are happening. And people are saying, oh, well, I got a headache today, or, oh, well, I feel kind of weird today, or, oh, my hair is starting to fall out, I must be going bald, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't even think that it's something on their wall.
That's right.
Don't even think about it. If you put a plant next to one of those things, watch it die.
That's right. Here's an interesting thing here, and this is this year, like 2013. In Belgium, their largest telephone company, the president and CEO of that, his name is Didier, like D-I-D-I-E-R, Bellens, B-E-L-L-E-N-S. So he runs the Belgium's largest telephone company, and yet he's banned Wi-Fi and cell phones from all his offices.
My. And gee, a lot of stuff comes out of Belgium, like the EU, for example.
Yeah.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
Why are these guys in high places refusing it for their own consumption and enforcing it on everyone else?
Yeah.
Why would that be?
Yeah. And also, like the Swiss, this is just this last month in Switzerland, where they say that phones probably cause cancer. Not possibly. This is a Swedish review, strengthens the ground for concluding that radiation from cellular and cordless phones is a probable cause of cancer.
Uh-huh. This, of course, after billions and trillions are made selling
tech,
and while every second ad on TV is for something wireless.
That's right, for sure.
If it ain't wireless, it's a pharma drug.
Yep.
Or insurance.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's getting absolutely ridiculous. We can't turn around without being hit by something.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about other areas of the country, in Canada particularly? I mean, I know you've been going great guns in BC for a long time, and I'm hoping that none of you run out of gas, because I know how it is with activism. It's, you know, you fight against a brick wall for so long, and people start to burn out.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, because although I know there is a very solid group headed by Martin Weatherall and some people that work with him,
yeah,
in Ontario, I'm wondering, you know, what else is happening across the country? Is BC the bellwether, or are you on your own? What's going on there?
Well, I think we are, much as is California in the States. Things seem to start there and then kind of spread eastward. And I think much is the same in Canada. And now, of course, you know that you had smart meters long before we did, but Dalton McGuinty has come out and said publicly that it was one of the biggest mistakes he's ever made, and had
mm-hmm.
he to do it over again, he would not have them in.
Yeah. And, of course, he's no longer the premier,
that's
so
right,
a lot of good that does us.
Yeah, yeah. But even his privacy commissioner, I can't remember her name now, but she came out and publicly and stated that smart meters are a treasure trove. This is her words, not mine.
Uh-huh.
A treasure trove for thieves, hackers, would-be criminals. She admitted that, what the heck was it, 175,000 customer records were violated or, like, hacked, in other words.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's happening all over the place. The records that are supposed to be private are being exposed by God knows who.
Yep.
To God knows who.
Yep.
And of course, they make a big example out of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, that everybody's cheering that, and they're cheering anonymous because all of these secrets. And now we find out that there are laws exempting from Freedom of Information Act requests information on trade groups.
Yeah.
All of that is secret. All
yeah.
these agreements are secret.
Yeah.
What do they include? Do they include the smart grid?
Yeah.
My bet, yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, are you aware of the latest? It's in the news currently out here, and that is in terms of the White House and or the Pentagon and or NSA and or the FBI having access to the records of all the cell phone companies and Google and Facebook.
Since 2007.
Yeah.
Google, Facebook, Yahoo, AOL.
Yeah. That's right.
All of the chat groups, everything.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've known all along about Facebook. You post anything on Facebook, they have the copyright to it. People's photos from their private pages are winding up in advertisements.
Yeah.
And they have no say and they have no compensation. And in the meantime, the intellectual property laws are being changed. Why is that? Well, that's because intellectual property, that means patents. You can translate that to patents.
Yeah.
And the patents are now protected by the trade organizations, which are secret, and that supersedes Canadian law, domestic law anywhere in the world. And because of that, that means we can't refuse. And our government has been signing that stuff. We're going to be getting into that in the second hour when Jeremy Arney joins us in a few minutes. So we've got about maybe 7 minutes left. I think my clock is not terribly reliable, but we've got about 7 minutes left until we have to say goodbye, Jerry. So, you know, at this point in time, can we get back into your challenge and what we can do to help you with that? Because I really want to make sure everybody's aware, you know, of what you're doing, who you're challenging, and how do we get our hands in on it?
Well, I have a letter here from the CEO, and it's very disappointing because it's written by one of his minions. And essentially, they put forward the same old diatribe, that is that... To read, just says, Fortis BC has participated in a lengthy public and transparent regulatory process in its application. And, of course, I was an intervener and still am, like, in that. So I know the baloney that is there. And it's heavily, heavily controlled by lawyers. And they only speak of a smart meter as if it has only the one transmitter. They don't even want to go anywhere near all those other transmitters that end up in your house, you know, connected to what they call the home area network, mm-hmm. of which there are something like typically 15, you know. So that's going to go nowhere. I think what's going to happen, and we have all the communities in BC are trying to spread that word around here, but the media are not picking it up, which really is disappointing, but it's very telling as well. So we're putting an awful lot of hope on this this First Nations ban that is going to come out and publicly and officially oppose any installation of smart meters on their property.
That's excellent, but maybe it's time to pay Mr. Walker's office a visit.
Well, it's just shocking here, Dee. If, like, anywhere I go, there's all kinds of opposition, and people come up to me from, like, in every quarter, it seems. And at times like this, I wish that I lived elsewhere, because here in Kelowna, whether it's because we have a predominance of older people or what, but you talk about apathy and ignorance and disinterest, you would be hard-pressed to find a place worse than Kelowna for, in that respect. Let me read your readers. This is another slide on my PowerPoint. Plummeting house prices due to high, extremely low frequency and electromagnetic frequency radiation. Buying a house or living in a house with EMF, electromagnetic frequencies, will be an economic disaster. In a few years, when power line radiation is as well known as asbestos and radon, a house near power lines or with high EMF will be practically impossible to sell. Business Week magazine writes that there are over 100 lawsuits regarding power lines and property devaluation. Similarly, cell phone towers also have a terrifying impact on prospective house purchasers or on tenants. It is now known in the States that cell phone masts can reduce the sales price of real estate by anywhere from 40 to 60%, if it can be sold at all, mm-hmm. and result in rent reductions of anywhere from 10 to 20%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And, of course, that's the price you pay for getting sick.
Yeah. And yet, you know, we know now, for example, in the UK, as of May the 10th, the British government has announced that smart meter installation throughout the country will be delayed by more than a year to investigate, quote, risks, unquote. Mm-hmm. That's encouraging.
Yeah, that's encouraging. Also, I've heard from some of my contacts over in the UK that, you know, people are very, very reluctant to even talk about getting smart meters over there. They've heard so much garbage from over here that, you know, a lot of awareness has been raised thanks to the issues that we have had. And so they're facing a little bit of an uphill battle there, thank God for small mercies. And hopefully that battle will translate over here so that we can pick up some steam and get people really aware of what's being foisted on them. Because, I mean, come on, people, it's your children here.
Well,
you know, I mean, for me, somebody says, well, you're living next to a smart meter, you're going to get cancer 20 years down the road. Oh, I'm in my 60s now. What do I care? You know? Don't try and frighten me. But I've got a four-year-old grandson.
That's
for him,
right.
I'm worried.
That's exactly right. And so you should be worried, yeah.
Yes. For him, I'm worried. Not for me.
I live my life. Like, if only we can get the truth out. Like, if the public were to know that our exposure limits in Canada, which are almost the highest in the world, meaning the most dangerous, mm-hmm. that if indeed we were to conform to the most recent independent scientific study, which is, you know, participated by, I think, 10 different countries, two scientists from Canada, 21 PhDs, 10 medical doctors, but their conclusion essentially recommended all countries of the world reduce their exposure limits down to a limit which, for Canada to comply, we'd have to lower ours by 3 million to 6 million times.
Wow.
That's the By Initiative Report 2012, which people can find for themselves on the Internet.
Wow.
3 million to 6 million times too high.
Good we're all, you know, we're superhuman. We, you know, we can take it. Come on, give us some more radiation. We're good to go, even if we glow in the dark. people are crazy, are they not? I don't know. So where do people go, Jerry, to follow you? Citizens for Safe Technology has a website.
Well, I'm involved with both Citizens for Safe Technology and also
and
the Coalition.
Stop Smart Meters, BC.
Yeah. And we're also aligned, of course, with your Citizens for Safe Technology in Ontario, where the word four is substituted with the numeral four. So Citizens, number four, Safe Technology. And that's Frank Clegg, by the way, the former president and CEO of Microsoft Canada.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we've got some high-powered people in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I just wish, like I said, they were a little bit louder.
No, I agree with you. Yeah.
You know, and I know that Martin Weatherall has played a huge part out here in Ontario. Martin is a former police officer.
Yes.
And has been stricken badly with electromagnetic sensitivity, so Martin has not been well. You know, we can't lose these people. They're the ones who speak out because they're so affected. And we can't be losing these people and not having anybody to stand in their place. You know, we have to get people moving in this province because we are under a horrendous assault. BC has only had part of their province covered. Ontario is just about done. We're just about done here. So it's getting bad. It's getting
very bad. Well, you have one very good member of parliament there. Well, actually, there are two that I know of. The one I know best or better rather, is Alex Adamenenko. He's NDP. And by the way, I'm not NDP. So I'm not trying to push like my own political beliefs on anybody. All I know is that he was an intervener with me at the hearings with the Fortis BC.
Yeah, well, he is an MP from BC.
That's right.
So,
but he's very outspoken. He's very well informed.
Alex is awesome. We've spoken to Alex on a number of issues, and it just seems that, you know, whatever is in the public's interest is what Alex will chase down, and good on him, and I hope he stays in governance forever because he's one of those people who actually will represent his constituents. Hallelujah for people like Alex. And where are the rest of you conservatives who are representing your government to your constituents instead of your constituents to your government? Where are you? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, I agree with you.
We shall see what we shall see, but thank God for people like you who have taken so much of your life and dedicated it to helping the rest of us. You spent the majority of your career in service to the country, and now you're serving the country in another way. People like you are heroes, and I really can't applaud you enough. My hands would fall off before I could applaud you enough.
Well, I couldn't do it if I didn't have a wife who supported me.
Yeah, that's right. There's always a great woman behind every great guy, right? Well, good for her. Good for her, and bravo to her, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really, really, there's freaky stuff going on out there, people.
Yeah.
Citizens for Safe Technology, Google them, find them.
Yeah.
Stop Smart Meters BC Coalition, find them, get on to them, learn what they're talking about, see what Jerry's talking about, and then go act in your own community and get on these people because we've got to. This is life and death. This is no joke. This is no joke.
I couldn't agree more.
So, happily, we are able, through stations like bbsradio.com, we're able to get this information out. I want to let people know right here and now the archives to Zero Point are available. I will be sending them out, the URL for that, out to my list shortly. And in the meantime, if you go to bbsradio.com and look for the Zero Point show, you'll find the archives there, and you can download this radio show with Jerry, and please pass it on, post it wherever you can, share the information. That's what it's for, and we need that. We need that. So hopefully, Jerry, your people will take this and use it to best advantage, and we wish you all the Godspeed we can muster.
Dee, thank you for all you're doing.
Oh, hey, don't thank me. It's you guys. You guys are the ones who are in the trenches. And bravo to you, and thank you so much.
Well, again, it's been a pleasure being on your show, Dee. Thanks for
inviting me. Great.
Well,
we'll have you back again. We will definitely have you back again. And keep in touch and let us know what's going on.
And I'll let you know about that press release.
Yes, you do that, because I'll be sharing that all over the place.
Atta girl.
You want to know it.
Okay.
Well,
God bless.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we are back, and now we have our second guest with us today. It's one of my favorite government-bashing people in the whole wide world. Welcome, Jeremy Arney, former CAP candidate out in British Columbia. He was running for the Canadian Action Party, and Jeremy is the parliamentary watchdog. He's the guy, every day, he watches those buggers in Parliament, and he reads Hansard, and he makes sure that whatever they say that's out of line, they get told about. That's who we got now. So you're ready to bash some Harper, Jeremy?
Oh, sure. Whenever you want, Dee. Hi. How are you?
Oh, well, have at it, my friend. You know, what can we talk about first?
Well, I was listening to your chat with Jerry. And you mentioned that the delightful gentleman from Edmonton who's left the caucus and gone over the other side.
Yeah, Brent Raffkever, good for him.
Yeah, I agree, but my reaction is somewhat tempered by the fact that it was almost a fit of pique on his part, because his fellow caucus people wouldn't back up some of the stuff he wanted to go through in his private members bill. So he got kicked off and sort of cut off his nose to spite his face, so to speak,
yeah,
and went over to the other side. But I got to admit, he had the guts to do it, so good for him.
Yeah, well, he had the guts.
But I wish more of them would follow his lead without having to have some little personal thing push them in to do it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, maybe that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. Because
I'm saying. You know, it's a shame that it took something like this, something personal to him, instead of something personal to his constituents. But anyway, he did it. Great. I haven't seen him, and he wasn't in the house on Friday, I don't think, because I didn't see him there. Didn't see him in any of the voting or anything, so I guess he hasn't just switched from one side to the other yet.
Yeah, well,
but it's interesting, isn't it, the way they're storming and saying, hey, he's got to resign, he's got to resign. Why?
Why? Belinda
Stronach should he have to resign?
Belinda Stronach didn't.
No.
Excuse me, if it goes the other way, oh, they can stay, but if it goes away from Harper, they can't?
I mean, it's just so funny. It's pathetic.
Well, it is pathetic. But I've been hearing since last fall, I've been hearing from some people who have some pretty good inside lines into the Hill, that they're saying there's been a lot of grumbling going on within the back benches of the Tory caucus. And we've known for a long time, of course, that MPs are muzzled, and we know why they're muzzled. But now they're finding out that they're really muzzled, and they're not so happy about it. There's over a dozen of them. So how many would it take to cross the floor, or even get to the point of voting non-confidence against their own leader? How many would it take for his majority to go away?
If you take them from one side to the other, he's got a majority of, what is it, 23 or something?
Something like that. So
Twelve
of them would do it, because that would add the 12 over on the other side and negate it on his side. So if the same bunch that was told to me was rallying together and getting angry last fall were to do what Brent Raffkever did, the whole scenario would change, wouldn't it? Because he'd be vulnerable to non-confidence, and we could get rid of him.
Well, you've been reading my letters, Dee. How many times have I written to the backbenchers and told them that very thing, that the power behind the throne does not lie in the PMO's office, but it lies with them?
Exactly.
Because if they don't offer their support,
there is no
power. The
power
doesn't exist.
And if you extrapolate that, Jeremy, if you extrapolate that to humankind, remember Percy Shelley? Rise up in an vanquishable number, right?
Yeah.
Because really, we outnumber them so much. And the only thing stopping us is apathy and stupidity. Apathy and ignorance and stupidity, the three things.
Or as in the recent case in the BC election, I won't bother to vote because somebody else will do it for me.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, there's all kinds of things going on about that, about, the terrible campaign by Dixon, the NDP, and all the rest of it. But I'm firmly convinced in my own pea brain that it was more people who were NDP supporters who said, this is such a foregone conclusion, I don't need to bother to go out. So only 50% show up, and of those 50%, enough of them were the Liberals. Bingo, you got it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, this is what happens with our federal government. Same thing. You know, it doesn't mean anything if I don't vote. Well, it does mean something if you don't vote. And if you don't pay attention to what your representative is doing, then you deserve every darn thing that comes your way. Smart meters? Okay. That's a very important topic, and you just had an hour on it. And it's largely because we allowed that to happen.
Yes, exactly. And it's worse in Ontario because we were so blind out here that they literally plastered the province with these damn things, and nobody said boo. Nobody said boo. So now here we are in BC again, BC being the bellwether for the country. Well, bravo to BC, but what the hell is wrong with the rest of us? You know, and we outnumber these guys in Parliament. Why are we not doing what I was talking to a friend earlier today? It's time to name them and shame them. It's time.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yes, exactly. For those of you who aren't familiar with Jeremy Arney's blog.wordpress.com, write that down. Jeremy, Jeremy, ArneySBlog.wordpress.com. You got to go there and see what this guy does. He makes me laugh every day. the things you pick up on. And this carbon tax thing that they keep bringing up against the NDP.
Well, they've dropped that now.
Since
they had that week's break, they've dropped it because they've got something else. They've got this there's something about a brown envelope 17 years ago.
Oh,
carbon tax hasn't been mentioned since they came back because they've got this thing where Mulcair was supposed to have had a meeting with the mayor of Laval, and he had a brown envelope in his hand, and Mulcair didn't ask him. But this is what I understand. Mulcair didn't even ask what he was, looked at it, turned around, said, I'm okay, and walked away.
Interesting.
And it never even occurred to him that there was a big problem about this until someone asked him a few years ago, and he said, yeah, it happened.
Oh,
and then the cops came and said, what happened? He said, I met with a guy, and he had a brown paper envelope in his hand, and I didn't want anything to do with it. I don't know what was in it, but I walked away. Now, Harper actually said in the House yesterday that if he had stood up at that particular time and said he thought he'd been offered a bribe, which is ridiculous because what was in that brown bag, brown paper envelope, it might have been a picture of his wife or something, you never know. But anyway, Harper was saying that the Charbonneau Commission would not be in effect today if Mulcair had done what he was supposed to have done 17 years ago. That's the angle they're going on rather than the carbon tax.
Oh, dear.
That was why there was that letter of mine that some people are a little bit upset about to James Moore, which I won't go into right now because perhaps it's not a good idea to repeat it over the air, but I think you saw it.
Well,
that's a true story. And at the time I said, are you sure it was James Moore, not John Baird? And then the person who told me the story said it was James Moore.
Oh, my.
Hey. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Anyway. So the other thing that's happening, of course, is that there's some delightful Liberal senator who has got some money in an offshore account. I have not been able to find out how that money got there. Something to do with her husband. Now, did he put it there? Did it was an inheritance? How it got to be there, I don't know. But if it was a gift, you don't have to pay tax on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a gift that she was given of some money in an offshore account, she doesn't have to pay tax on that money. She only has to pay tax on the profit she makes
from the money.
with anything she does with that money. So that's another thing that's saying, oh yeah, we're going to pay profit, we're going to pay tax on income. You know, this is one of these unfortunate things. There's all kinds of people all over the place who have an idea about this. But if you read back in the Income Tax Act, it's all about profit.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Supreme Court of Canada at one stage in one of these cases said, if there was no intent to profit, then there is no tax.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this income tax thing is just a shambles. And somebody was telling me a little while ago that an accountant looked at the thing and said that there was no way in his lifetime that he could go through that act and understand it.
Yeah.
So how is the ordinary Joe, like you and I, so to speak, although we're not ordinary, neither one of us are, how could we possibly fill out our taxes knowing that everything that we put in there is correct, especially when it's a tax on income, when we're actually supposed to be filling out a tax on profit?
Yeah, exactly.
I put that on my,
and doesn't that go
I
back
put that on my
Lord,
last.
Doesn't that go back to the Lord Nelson Hotel case?
I'm not sure which one it goes back to, actually.
Because
there's so many cases that have taken place over the years, and this is what the latest ruling of the Supreme Court of Canada, profit is not intended, and there's no tax.
Well, income isn't profit, is it? It's payment.
No.
It's payment for a job done, so it's not profit. If you took that income then and invested it and made profit, that profit would be taxable, but not the income itself. And
that's
of course,
right.
Back in 1950, the Lord Nelson Hotel case out in the East, and this case actually wound up in very, very high court. And what they said in this case was that the Canada Revenue Ministry had absolutely no right to take tax from the average individual. And they were given 12 years to straighten out all the mess that they had in the Income Tax Act. Well, they didn't do that. And then in 1962, which was at the end of the 12-year limit, a memo came out. Now, I have seen this memo myself. I don't think I have it in my possession any longer, but I do know people who do. At any rate, this memo came out from the Finance Ministry saying that if agents of the revenue ministry, when collecting tax, went out and used the word involuntary, okay, when collecting tax, they said they can be charged with treason. So apparently the linchpin word is voluntary or involuntary. If it's a voluntary payment, then all bets are off. But if it's involuntary, they can't touch you. And if you say, I ain't volunteering, they can't touch you. And I, in fact, know somebody who actually sent registered letters and said, I'm no longer volunteering. And they haven't touched him since, in 15 years. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That they will hinge it on a word here and there. And then the way that legislation is written, and they use the word may. And under the government glossary, now I know you've dug into some of these things, and in the government glossary, the word may, I mean, you or I, if I say, well, I may go here or I may go there, it means you might. Possibility you won't, but you could. Okay? On the other hand, when you use the word may in parliamentary terms, it means must or shall, according to their own glossary. So when it said, back when we were all fighting Bill C-36 / Bill C-6,
mm-hmm.
which had a clause in it buried in the midst of the text, and it said that the minister, meaning the Minister of Health, may take direction from foreign authorities. Those foreign authorities were unnamed. But if you take the word may, it says must or shall.
That actually means
the minister must take or shall take direction from foreign authorities. Wait a minute. Aren't they our government? And who's governing them? Aren't they governing them? Aren't we governing them? Apparently not.
No, that was part and parcel of my submission to the Senate back in those days when they were, at that particular time, it was Bill C-6.
Yeah, me too. As you will recall, I think the two of us worked together on that a lot.
Yeah, we did. I used a lot of your stuff in my submission, which actually got accepted, and it was written when it was presented in letter form to the Senate, which was good. I didn't think it would be, but it actually was accepted. I got it done in French too, and the whole bit, so it was perfectly acceptable. And that was one of the points I think that made some of the liberals on the committee sit up and say, "What?"
Yeah,
and they actually made enough amendments to that that it got bumped till the next parliament.
Uh huh. Yeah.
So
well,
between you, all your hard work on it and that organization that you were with at that particular time, and that lawyer whose name at the moment escapes me, who I used extensively too in his writings, the natural health lawyer.
Oh, you mean Sean Buckley?
Yeah, Sean Buckley.
Yes.
Now, we managed to actually get enough people there to pay attention to what was going on with that bill.
Yeah, and if you will recall, that's when he prorogued Parliament. And while
yes, he did.
And while he prorogued Parliament, what did he do? He appointed more senators. So when Parliament came back, he had a conservative majority in the Senate all of a sudden.
Yeah, and we couldn't stop it anymore.
We couldn't stop it anymore. So this is the kind of machination you get out of Stephen Harper. You know, if he can't beat you with the numbers he's got, he'll get more numbers so he can beat you. And it's not about what do you want and is he serving you. It's not.
Oh, no, never has been. Never has been.
No, it never was. They were never serving us. They've always been serving another agenda. And whose agenda that is anybody's guess. You know, it's ludicrous. It is totally ludicrous. And somehow or another, people have to start waking up and start deciding that, you know, the country's worth it. Our children are worth it. Our future is worth it. You know, if we don't, who in the flying blue blazes is going to do it for us? You know, I mean, it's sort of like cleaning your house. You look at the dirt in your house and you don't do anything about it. What do you think, Molly Maid's going to show up?
I've been waiting for her.
Yeah, I know. Me too. You know, it's like I got cats. They call it furniture for a reason. I need a Molly Maid. Where is she? But we need Molly Maid in our government to clean them up.
What intrigues me is that a lot of this information that is right there in front of these MPs, but they miss it because of they're right there and they don't see it. And they get sent copies of me pointing out that something here is really wrong, and none of them seem to pick up the ball and run with it.
No, they can't.
You know, there is on one occasion, I think, Andrew Scheer cut off the member from the Yukon when he started talking about the problem with the leader of the NDP and his carbon tax. And I guess he got his hand really slapped because the following day, the same man was up doing the same thing, and he was allowed to carry on.
Uh-huh.
So why are some of these politicians from the NDP and the Liberals, and even Ms. May for that matter, why are they not picking up on some of the stuff I'm feeding to them that they don't see while they're right there as it's happening? Because they're caught up in the emotion of it? You know, some of the absurd stuff that happens, like that thing with the veterans the other day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was absolutely unbelievable.
Well, I tell you... you know, I've had an ongoing little repartee going with Elizabeth May, and of course, the interesting thing is she has never once answered me. She
really?
Won't answer me. I keep hammering her on. I keep hammering her on the sovereignty issue. She won't touch it. She won't touch it, and yet she, of all people, ought to be. She, because she's coming out against all kinds of things, and the things that she's coming out against are tied up in trade group stuff, and because it's tied up in trade group stuff, it's also tied up in the sovereignty issue, and she will not touch it. I've demanded of her. I want an answer, and I don't want talking points. I want straight goods. You know, I don't get anything out of Miss Elizabeth May, but then I look at who founded the Green Party, right?
Well, you've got to also remember that she was a large part of that original North American free trade deal, too.
Yeah, well, there
she
you
was
go.
Working for Mulroney at the time. But nonetheless, I'll give her a little flea in her ear about that because there is no reason to not answer people who are trying to benefit Canada. She claims to be doing that. Let's make sure that she answers you. I'll see what I can do.
Absolutely.
In the last election, she was supposed to buy me dinner, not to run.
She said,
"You're not going to run, are you?" And I said, "If you buy me dinner, perhaps I won't." She never did, but I didn't anyway.
Oh,
I could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah, she owes you one. So
yeah, she does.
So you're going to have to, obviously, you're going to have to write a complete blog on exactly how your dinner date goes.
That would be fun. Incidentally, my blog is not really very much up to date. I haven't done very much with it lately, but I'm planning to get it back up and running again.
Well,
I've been just so appalled by what's been going on, and
it's getting to the point now where there's so much stuff going on to report on that you just kind of go, what do I post, what do I not post? I haven't got room for everything. How do I pick? And you can't, you know. But if you were to post some of the letters you've been sending out my way in the last little while, I think your readers and your fans would have a lot to keep them busy for a while.
Yeah, I set up my blog so that you can actually get at all the letters. By the way, there's a magazine out here out of Nanaimo called The Dialogue. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, I am indeed. Dialogue.ca is the website for that one, folks.
Yeah. We had a lunch meeting up in Nanaimo last week, and Janet and I were chatting, and I said to her, "Okay, Janet, what should I really do my next blog about?" And she looked at me and said, I'm not even going to make a suggestion. There's so much out there that it's impossible to know where to start. And that was Janet, who's sort of seeing everything all over the place.
Yeah.
And even she is getting to that point of, where do you begin?
We're getting
overwhelmed. So let's begin with Stephen Harper, who, if you go back to you don't have to go all the way back to the history of him, but
let me get my ball bat out. If we're going to talk about Harper, I need my ball bat. I need my fungo at my side in case I want to hit something, because he makes me mad.
Yeah, does he ever? So we all got an inkling of what he was about when he made that speech to the Foreign Relations Committee, I think it was, about Canada.
Oh, yeah.
And he just pulled Canada apart and put it back together again as a bunch of absolutely useless people with a useless form of government with nothing to say for itself. And, if ever there was somebody who was saying he basically hated his country and the people in his country, that was him. And then he goes off and he does his various reform bits and all the rest of this stuff and forms the alliance after a whole bunch of whatever. Then we come to that interesting thing about the formation of the current Conservative Party. We've got to go back a bit further than that to the argument between, if you like, argument between David Orchard and Peter McKay about the Conservative leadership, and the agreement that was made that David Orchard would stand down and let Peter McKay take leadership, provided McKay would not talk to Harper about amalgamation.
Uh-huh.
And that was the agreement.
Yep.
And within 3 months, McKay and Harper were buddy, 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 coming up with an agreement which is available on the net quite easily.
Yep.
You look at it, and it's like, oh my God! And it's the formation of the Progressive, the Conservative Party of Canada.
Yeah, and then funny thing, you know, a long time ago, you remember Dear Anne and Dear Abby out of the newspapers from a long time ago, and I guess one of them is still alive, if not the other one. But at any rate, I can remember a long time ago that she was talking about the plus and minus list. The plus and minus list was essentially that when you're in a relationship with somebody and you are in a state where you don't know whether or not you want to stop the relationship, what you do is you make a list of pluses and minuses, and this is how you're supposed to determine your relationship. Well, as it happened with McKay, and as it happened with David Orchard, we saw the full extent of treachery. And what we saw was, this is another thing Dear Abby and Dear Anne used to say, if you lose them, if you cheat to get there, you're going to lose it the same way. in a relationship. In other words, if you steal somebody's husband, you're going to lose them because somebody's going to steal them back from you.
Yep.
Okay? Whether it's the first wife resurfacing or somebody new, you're going to lose them the same way. Well, I find it real interesting that after all of that hoo-ha with David Orchard and all of that hoo-ha about, you know, trying to decide what's best for the nation and not doing a plus and minus list before deciding, what happens to Peter McKay? He gets himself hooked up, not buddy-buddy, but Betty-Betty with Belinda Stronach, who then has a little meeting. She has a little meeting with Martin when Martin was prime minister. And what happens? All of a sudden, she's a minister crossing the floor and McKay's dumped on his butt. So he lost it the same way. He made the deals. He made deals, and they started losing the same way. So isn't that interesting? It's like, it's all a human game. No matter how you slice it, it comes down to human games and human personalities and who gives a damn and what they give a damn about.
One of the things about this whole situation was, though, that if he hadn't got together with Harper, Harper would still be part of the alliance.
Exactly.
And he'd be nothing.
Exactly.
But as it is, he was able to get hold of a name which was synonymous with Canadian heritage.
Yep.
So your previous guest has voted conservative all his life, as he says in his video earlier on. But the conservatives he's voting for today are not the conservatives he used to vote for.
No.
That's what I think. Probably 70% of the people, of the 25% of the people who vote conservative today, don't understand this is not the conservative party they voted for all their lives.
Exactly.
This is not at all.
If they want to know how bad genetic modification is, all they need to do is look at the Conservative Party of Canada and figure out what that is. They inserted a foreign gene in the Conservative Party, and look what we got.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's funny. Incidentally, that letter I sent to Ritz and Agrivac about they were looking after our safety, weren't they, as far as genetically modified foods are concerned? I got a reply from her, which basically said absolutely nothing. I mean, she at least replied, but she needn't have bothered because it says absolutely nothing. I'm working on a reply to that. I'll send it to you along with her letter.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, too, because you can't get a real reply out of Leona.
No, but Ritz was standing up yesterday talking about the safe food safety and stuff. Again, you know, the Foods Inspection Agency, and I'm thinking to myself, you're doing all this stuff about meat, but what about the food that's feeding the meat?
Yeah, exactly.
If we are what we eat,
so are cows.
We're eating genetically modified wheat coming through our cows along with the aluminium from the chemtrails.
Yes.
This part of the world I live in is absolutely beautiful. Every morning when the blue sky's out, I think to myself, how long is it going to stay blue? And usually by mid-afternoon, it's gone gray.
Yeah.
Not because of clouds, but because of chemtrails.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was looking earlier this year, you know, I was standing up at the corner talking to a friend of mine, and it's kind of a gathering place because there's a Starbucks there and a church on the corner, and if it's nice out, people sit on the church steps and sip their Starbucks. And we were sitting there and looking up in the sky, and I'm pointing out there's another ding-blasted chemtrail going because they were laying one right as we spoke. And I'm looking up at this thing, and I said, you notice how pale the sky is? And my friend said, yeah, it isn't the same blue. And I said, I can remember when I was a kid lying on the lawn or, you know, in an expanse of grass in a park, and just looking up into the sky and getting a sense of the incredible depth and scope of the universe, just looking into the sky. And now you look at the sky and it's pastel blue, flat, doesn't have depth. You know, it's like we're living in some kind of a bubble. It's not real. And our kids will never see the sky in its normal color. If they keep this up, they will never in their lives experience what the sky actually looks like. And that to me, that's stealing from our children. That's theft. That alone. Never mind the health impact and everything else. What right does anyone have to change the color of the sky? What right do they have? Never mind the health. If I want to get into the health, we could talk about the health issues of chemtrails until sometime in the middle of next month. And I don't think we'd run out. But aesthetically alone, they've changed so much. People don't appreciate anything anymore. You know, and you have to go to great lengths to find something that hasn't been, not just doesn't have the footprint of man, but hasn't been stomped to oblivion.
There's a little park, a fairly large park at Beacon Hill in Victoria with a flagpole on it, and underneath the flagpole, or almost underneath it, there's a park bench under some trees. And I like to go there when it gets to the point where I just need to get away and be able to look at the trees and the sun and the sky and the Olympic Mountains over in Washington State and hear the birds and listen to the peacocks screaming down in the zoo and the kids laughing as they play with the goats. All that sort of stuff is a huge relaxant for me. And I was sitting there the other day and an old fellow comes wandering up beside me and he says, "I've never seen so many contrails in the sky in my life." And I said, "What makes you think they're contrails?" And he said, "Well, they come from aeroplanes." I said, "Does anything coming from an aeroplane automatically have to be a contrail?" And he said, "Yeah, but they're funny contrails, aren't they?"
Uh-huh.
So I introduced him to the whole concept of chemtrails, and he was absolutely appalled.
Oh, he was
getting up from the bench, and he said, "I've got one of these newfangled things called a laptop," and he said, "I'm going to go home right now, and I'm going to look up chemtrails." And I said, "You do that, my friend. If I've done nothing else today, I've helped you to understand the world that we are both living in. We're going to be leaving it soon, but what are we leaving for our kids?" And he said, "That's what I'm worried about." And off he went.
There you go.
So then, well, he must have been about 80-something. So he was going to go off. He certainly got this bee in his bonnet about
good
this, the chemtrails. And away he went.
You know, age makes you brave, doesn't it? You just don't give a damn anymore. So off you go.
I think I'm on all kinds of lists, and they really wanted me. They know where I am. In my letters, I don't hide it. I give them my phone number, my full address, postal code, the whole bit. I've got nothing to really worry about because I'm quite convinced that if they decide they're going to go ahead with that Northern Gateway pipeline, I'll be up there on the front line. That's probably where I'll cook.
Yeah, well, there
I'm
you go.
I'm going to be up there along with people like Rafe Mann. Pardon me?
Yep. That's fine by me, too, because I'll be right there with you. You know,
I think there's a little village set up there already from what I was hearing the other day.
Ah.
No, really, they've got a little village set up there, and there's a constant turnover of people coming through, which I find absolutely fascinating.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know,
anyway, what else is happening that we should chat about? You know, bashing Stephen Harper is a lot of fun, but it's pretty pointless because he's such a non-existent little twit.
Yeah, well,
he's a puppet.
He's a puppet
of major magnitude, and it's unfortunate that he has the effect. But I'm interested in some of the people underneath him, and why they say the things they do, and why they think they can get away with it.
Yeah, and the other thing that really concerns me is a major point for people to consider, and that is, why exactly is it that we allow this guy to do so many things in secret? Why do we allow it? He doesn't have a mandate to do it. He's been in contempt of parliament. He's been found guilty by a judge. He has also been found, it's also been found that the last election was a fraud. I don't see any moves, do you? Any moves at all to make any declaration about that election or to have another election or to follow through with that ruling, do you? I mean,
no, in fact, that ruling is, if you're talking about the two Conservative MPs who should be removed from their seats, they are the pet poodle, the government pet attack poodle, Polyev is basically saying we're going to wait till the court action is over and done with before we do anything about it. Wait a minute, they want people who haven't paid their taxes in the NDP to step up, step aside, yet someone who's sitting in their seat illegally should stay there?
Yeah, really.
And
again, well, they should leave. If they cross the floor or they quit the caucus, they should leave and submit to a by-election, even though their own guys cross the floor. You know.
Actually, that new Liberal member from Labrador stood up in yesterday and basically said, give me one reason why, since the people of Labrador are given their choice to reject the Conservatives, why the rest of the country shouldn't also get that choice.
Oh, they're starting to get ballsy on the Hill. Somebody must have sprayed some testosterone over the Hill in one of those chemtrails.
Yeah, perhaps that's what it is.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what it is. And, you know, maybe we should check for chin hairs on the female MPs and watch their voices to deepen. Because somebody's got to man up. Somebody up there has to man up. Where's the testosterone on the Hill these days, I want to know?
It's all squashed by this. By this strange concept that if the master doesn't sign your papers, then you can't run. You know, that's what it really boils down to. You know, it's not a question of, although I've tried to explain to hundreds of people, that it doesn't, if you decide that you're going to go with your constituents as opposed to the party that you were representing at the time because your party no longer represents or pays attention to that constituency, if you go back to that constituency and say, look, I know you elected me as an X, but now X is not doing what we told you we were going to do. And as such, as your representative, I can no longer be part of X.
Yeah.
What do you think about my run as my crossing the floor and becoming an independent? Is that acceptable? Because then I can represent you as
exactly.
I'm supposed to.
Exactly.
I don't think that there's a constituency in the country that wouldn't put you back in again right now in the next election. For telling them exactly
right.
What you did, why you did it, and being honest.
Yep. Well, I think that the breath of fresh air might make a lot of people giddy.
if they just cross the floor without any warning, without any, you know, without going back to their constituents first, yeah, then that's a bit of a blow. But if you go back to your constituents and say, look, this is what I want to do because I can't support X anymore, then I'm convinced that the constituents back in your place will say, okay, let's see what you can do as an independent. And when the next election comes up, because you've been honest, you will get back in again.
Yeah,
and it's everybody tries to say it's a question of money. Actually, it really isn't. I think we're lowering the ability of the people who do vote to think, to say
yep.
that it's money.
Yep. Well, I mean, when you see... As I have, now, I think I've told you, I've worked in I don't know how many political campaigns back when I was young and stupid. And back when I actually thought it made a difference, you know, back before I saw Mouseland by Tommy Douglas, back before I figured out that, you know, that all cats are the same when it comes to government. And, you know, I've watched as... people who are running for these federal parties and even provincially are dictated to from what's known as on the inside track as the war room. Now,
yep.
in the war room in Ottawa, and all the parties have their war room, in the war room they have total security. They have access to every clipping across the country. They've got clipping services. They hit the news services. They see everything that's on radio, everything that's on TV, everything that's in the newspapers, and that's all newspapers and all magazines. They pay huge money to have people scour these things in order to take the pulse of the nation. So they, and it's not so that they find out what the people want. It's so that they find out what the people want so that they can dissuade them from what they want. And this is how they use it. And then they develop their talking points. And if somebody, you know, raises an issue, you go knock on someone's door, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm running for the whatevers in the election, and I'm here today to ask you constituents, you know, what's bothering you? They don't do that. What they do is, we're here to tell you that this is the way things should be, and here's a brochure. Read through that. If you've got any questions, give us a call. Okay? And all that's in the brochures is the talking points. And they
yep.
all come out of the war room, and nobody is allowed to think. You start questioning these guys and press the point, and within seconds, they'll be running away. Within seconds, because once they are off the talking point, they are literally gagged. They are literally
gagged. That happens to the candidate. That happens to the candidates, too, even if they're an ex-cabinet minister.
Oh, yeah, it happens to all of them. So you got to wonder, I mean, you know, for people who still think it's a conspiracy theory that they're putting together a world government, right? You got to wonder, why would you do that if you had an independent and democratic government? Why would you even worry about talking points? Why would you not worry more about what the people are thinking and saying and actually manage their affairs? That's what government is for, is to manage the cumulative and collective affairs of a nation as a business. And that's what it is. Well, of course, we're registered on the stock exchange. A lot of people don't know that. But regardless of that,
the bankrupt too.
But it's still an issue of management. Now, these people have managed us into complete bankruptcy. You just used the word bankrupt, and boy, are we ever. And, you know, they manage us into bankruptcy. They take away our freedom. They cover it all up with new laws, and they say that's good governance? This is not governing. And didn't we hire them to run the affairs of the country? Not to create the affairs of the country, but to run them? And didn't we used to do trade on a handshake and a how do you do? And didn't we used to be honorable in our dealings with other nations? And didn't we used to not have to worry about that stuff because we were all treating each other fairly? And now all of a sudden...
I seem to remember that way back when I was a tiny kid, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have to reach way back in my life, too. I mean, it's scary to me how far afield we have come from anything that looked representative on anything. And now what I'm afraid of is that they're going to start throwing doggy a bone here and there. I'm postulating the theory, and people might laugh at me, but I'm saying that I think they're going to let the people take Monsanto down. I think they're going to do that because people are focusing so heavily on Monsanto. It's like if you take down Monsanto, you've solved the GMO issue. But you haven't solved
anything. That's the misdirection, isn't it?
Yeah, well, remember Nuremberg? What did they do with IG Farben at Nuremberg? Everybody forgot about IG Farben because they split IG Farben into three companies, namely Bayer, Hext, and BASF. And funny thing, those three names pop up now as part of the GMO thing.
Yep.
So we're still dealing with Hitler's pharmaceutical company, even though it was unchartered at the Nuremberg trial. So what's going on here? Are they going to take Monsanto's corporate charter? So what? Monsanto owns biologics. They own all kinds of little companies that do their dirty work. And they can take down Monsanto, but not those other companies. So they haven't killed anybody. But that's what they're going to do, I think.
You're probably right.
Throw doggy a bone. Let the activists go into a feeding frenzy over Monsanto until they're nothing but a pile of bones, right? And in the meantime, what are they doing? Well, they're chemtrailing us to death. They're smart metering us to death. They're pharmaceutically drugging us to death. Then they got the new DSM-5 that's come out that basically makes every human emotion into a pathology. It's by the time you turn around, if you even pay attention to the bone that they're throwing, you miss entirely everything. And what frightens me is, what are they doing while all the activists are busy feeding on Monsanto? What are they doing behind the scenes? Well, they're protecting the patents. Who owns the patents? Not all Monsanto. You look at even marijuana, U.S. government has a patent on cannabinoids in marijuana as a cancer cure.
Strange, isn't it?
Like, what planet do I live on here that things are that ridiculous? You know, it's that ridiculous. And where are the people? Oh, they're out mowing their lawns on a Saturday afternoon, or they're going to the football game, or they're playing with their iPad or their iPhone, or they're glued to their computer or their whatever. But they sure aren't paying attention to this.
No.
They sure aren't.
I don't pay attention to a lot of things. Well, one of the things that's cropped up just recently is this the celebration of the landing in Normandy.
Uh-huh.
And there's a big, huge kerfuffle being made about that. And one person actually called it the highlight of the Canadian military history, which I don't actually think is true. I mean, it's a great event, and we did a phenomenal job there, and it was just sheer guts and bravery that did it. But there's also Vimy Ridge, which required not only guts and bravery, but also a certain amount of subterfuge to achieve that. Nonetheless, we achieved it. And I'm thinking to myself, things happen in threes. So what's the betting in about 5 years' time there will be a huge anniversary celebration proposed for the victory in Libya? And it would be classified as one of Canada's greatest victories, regardless of the fact that our hands are so red with that whole conflict,
oh,
with war
God.
Crimes and cluster munitions and destroying water pipelines that supplied the people of Libya, you know. But it's to me, it's part of a pattern. They're trying hard to find a modern version of what Canada used to be and still could be if we were allowed to be.
Mm-hmm.
We were refused that opportunity in Haiti because all the military did there was rebuild the prisons.
Yep.
They refused our search and rescue teams to leave Toronto because they said they would have to be supported. They were completely self-sustainable for 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have gone on a rotation basis. After 14 days, if they couldn't find anything, there's nothing to find. So they could have all gone, but they were refused to even leave the country. The things which we could do, we weren't allowed to do. Our military weren't allowed to do. And then something which we really shouldn't have done, which was Libya, we went ahead and did. So to me, it means that somehow or another, they've got to find a way to glorify Libya, to try in their own pea brains to classify that criminal act of Libya with Vimy Ridge and the landing in Normandy.
Yeah.
To me, there is absolutely no correlation whatsoever.
No, absolutely not. And you know what? You know what's really funny? It's like they've got people so hornswoggled on all these interventions that they've been pulling off. There's a guy who lives down the street from me, maybe 6-7 houses, and he is from Libya. And, you know, I was just out on the street, walking up the street one day, and we happened to, you know, practically collide in the street, and we were walking up the street together. You know, I'd seen him around, and he knew I was a neighbor, and I knew he was a neighbor. And I noticed he had an accent, so I asked him, I said, "Where are you from?" He says, "I'm from North Africa." "Really?"
Oh.
I said, "What part?" Right? And he says, and he gets this funny look on his face and smiles and looks away from me and looks up into the sky and says, "Libya." I said, "Oh, you poor son of a bitch." I said, "I have to tell you, Gaddafi was one of my heroes." And he got a great big grin on his face. He said, "You mean you know?" I said, "Yeah, I know. And a whole bunch of us know what was going on over there." And he was so grateful, right? He has become like, you know, a good friend up the street now because he knows I knew about what was going on. And people in Canada, they don't know what was going on. They don't know that things about Osama bin Laden. I mean, come on. The guy who got beheaded or did the beheading supposedly in the UK last week, chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. Turns out that, again, MI6 had approached these guys to work for them. Again. So how many of these false flag events are involved with CIA, FBI, MI6, CSIS, you know, NSA, alphabet soup again? So got all of that going on, and then all the corruption in government, and it's enough to drive the average person batty, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. The other thing, I was reading something, too, about Parliament has to know where our regular forces are going and what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
But they don't have to be told about special forces.
So it's all special forces
can be sent anywhere without parliamentary permission or knowledge.
So
I'm wondering how many of our special forces units were in Libya.
Yeah, and I'm
quite a few.
I heard from a friend of mine who dated a guy from special forces back in what was it? Back in 2003. When they invaded Iraq, no, actually, it was the first one. It was the first war on Iraq. When they invaded in 1990, whatever the hell it was, when he went into Kuwait. And,
yep.
Of course, we know that was a setup because he had asked the Americans what did they want him to do because Kuwait was slant drilling under their border and stealing oil, directly stealing oil. And Secretary of State wrote back and said, the president doesn't care, do what you want. So he invades Kuwait, and the next thing you know, he's getting slammed. And the first thing that happened, then remember that war lasted, what, 2 weeks? And the first night that they attacked, in that shock and awe attack, they busted Saddam's bunker. And this fellow that my girlfriend went out with said it was Canadian Special Forces that busted the bunker, not
sure.
Americans. It was us. And we didn't know about it. Why? Because exactly what you just said.
No, they can be anywhere doing anything, and we don't have to know about it. And to me, that's wrong. Absolutely wrong.
It's only one
step from having our Canadian forces being Canadian forces, special forces, to being Canadian subcontracted Blackwaters.
Yeah, exactly. Subcontracted Blackwaters and special forces are basically hitmen in uniform. And quite frankly, I think we're above that as a nation, and I think Canadians ought to stand up and say so. I don't think we should have that right. Parliament should know. We should all know what's going on. There is no need for secrecy in any business.
No, you're right there. The thing is, as Canadians, we are above that.
Yeah.
But as a government, we're not.
Yeah.
And as Canadians, we should stand up and tell our government that we are above that.
Yeah.
We should be standing up much more often in mass and telling them that, no, we don't want trade agreements that are going to destroy us. No, we don't want union busting by a government which has no right to be in there. Either it's a crown corporation or it's not. If it's not, then sell it. And
exactly.
You just keep your blooming hands off the employees' money. I mean, that's ridiculous. And to sell a crown corporation, all it does is, I mean, Campbell was a perfect example of this. Everything that was making money for British Columbia, he sold.
Yep.
And then he gets all these discounts and taxes. Same thing to what Harper did when he got in.
Yep.
Discount taxes. And then he said, wait a minute, where am I going to get my money from?
Yeah, and they're doing the same thing in Ontario. But, Jeremy, you know what? We're reaching the top of the hour. We have, 1 minute left before we have to say goodbye. So I want to reiterate the address for your blog so people can follow along, because I'll tell you, if you don't have time to read Hansard yourself, you need to read Jeremy.
Love you dearly, Dee. Talk to you soon and keep in touch.
I love you too, and thank you for being here again. Again, it's Jeremy Arney's blog, Jeremy Arney. Oh, no, sorry, I got it wrong. Jeremy Arney's, jeremyarneysblog.wordpress.com. Go for it. You'll be glad you did. Jeremy, thanks again for being with us today. We're hitting right up at 6 o'clock, so it's time for us to say goodbye for another couple of weeks, but we will be back with more and more and more. So stick around. We'll be with you soon. Thanks for listening in today. God bless. Thanks, bbsradio.com. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.